Hello, I'm Mike Horace with your WCMU Morning News Roundup for Monday, June 22nd. Governor Gretchen Whitmer on Saturday called for Enbridge Energy to shut down both segments of the Line 5 pipeline under the Straits of Mackinac. The request was made after the company announced it had resumed operations through the pipeline's western segment, despite reporting significant damage to its eastern segment. Ben Thorpe reports.
Enbridge Energy says the pipeline's western segment has no issues or damage. As the company resumed using the western segment of the Line 5 pipeline, it noted, quote, "Our federal regulator has no objection to this plan." In response, Governor Whitmer said she was taken aback that the company would resume operation along part of the pipeline, quote, "without any explanation for the cause of this damage to the pipeline structure and no assurance that Enbridge has taken sufficient steps to mitigate future harm." The governor requested both segments of the line be shut down until the incident can be investigated. The Office of the Attorney General, which is involved in a lawsuit to shut down the pipeline, said in a statement that Line 5 is a clear and present danger to the Great Lakes. I'm Ben Thorpe, WCMU News.
More than 50 workers at a single farm in Coldwater are being quarantined after testing positive for COVID-19. The workers are temporary foreign workers who live in group housing on the farm. The state says the housing was inspected and everything was in compliance with state law. Rebecca Burns is with the health agency that covers Branch County, where Coldwater is located. She says there's no concern at this point that the outbreak has spread beyond the farm.
Individuals have been isolated together that are positive and away from others, and they're bringing food in to feed those folks, so it appears to be contained.
The farm is a greenhouse operation that sells tomatoes and peppers under the Sunset brand. The Centers for Disease Control says there is no evidence that COVID-19 can spread through food. Pelston Public Schools are installing new air cleaners as part of an effort to combat the coronavirus, Nick Westendorp reports.
The district plans to install more than 100 air filters at a cost of $48,000. Pelston Superintendent Stephen Seeley says the devices will help prevent the spread of coronavirus and other diseases, but they aren't a fix-all.
You know, if you and I were talking to each other, it doesn't knock down the particles instantly in the air. There's still a possibility of an infection being passed along.
He says the units will mainly help to prevent particles from floating in the air. He says they've got other protective measures in the works for staff and students, including copper door handles and automatic motion sensors in the bathrooms. Nick Westendorp, WCMU News.
One of the things coronavirus may leave a lasting impact on is public libraries. Many saw demand for ebooks soar during the pandemic, and they expect requests to remain high at least through the summer. Michael Livingston reports.
Public libraries closed their doors when coronavirus shutdowns were ordered in mid-March. Library staff began using technology to communicate with patrons. Online lending programs like Overdrive and Hoopla became the best way for libraries to remain operational. Sheila Bizinet directs the Per Marquette Library in Clare County. She says her library was able to push nearly everything to a virtual platform, even daily story times for children.
We were doing a lot of library cards by email so they could access electronic materials while we were closed. We switched everything that we were able to do, doing it virtually.
The Grace A. Dow Memorial Library in Midland is seeing similar patterns as it continues fighting both coronavirus and flood damages. The director says on nearly all lending platforms, double to quadruple the amount of materials are being rented out every month. The Midland Library does not yet have a public reopening date. Michael Livingston, WCMU News.
The nation is now in its third week of protests against police brutality after a Minneapolis police officer killed George Floyd. Bridge Magazine's Riley Began and WKAR's Abigail Sinsky report protesters' urgent desire for reform is not matched by lawmakers at the state capitol. Abigail Sinsky starts us off.
Hundreds of protesters marched on Lansing 2 weeks ago, chanting Black Lives Matter at an NAACP protest. It was the day before the state lawmakers met in the House Judiciary Committee.
I'm going to call House Judiciary to order.
Democrat Senator Jeff Irwin introduced a bill which requires non-biased de-escalation and mental health training for police. It passed in the state Senate, but now it's in a state House committee. Irwin says in a lot of places, many of these trainings are already on the books.
Now, my understanding is that that is a part of the current training. I know that in my local force that they have a duty to intervene policy and that they talk about that in their ongoing training. With this legislation, we were trying to kind of hit a sweet spot of providing some guide rails that would give the public more assurance and that would sort of nudge this training in the right direction.
Republicans are looking for law enforcement reforms, too. Committee member Steve Johnson asks Irwin if he would consider beefing up his bill to require more police training.
Would you be open to adding that into this training requirement as well? Because that's what really troubled me, is just seeing other people there watching it happen.
A lot of changes that have been recommended recently at the Capitol, including Irwin's bill, were written years before the nationwide protests.
Irwin said he got the idea from DeRay McKesson, an activist and co-founder of Campaign Zero, a nonprofit that proposes police reforms. McKesson says the bills that have been introduced in Michigan that focus on better training, a chokehold ban, and allowing bystander intervention are bare necessities.
While it is a good thing to do, we can't let people like okey-doke us into believing that this is like some monumental move. This is the floor, not the ceiling, right?
McKesson says there's little research to show that implicit bias training works, and reforms like this are a smokescreen.
Senator Irwin says he gets it. More needs to be done. He wrote the bill years ago in response to the police killings of Tamir Rice, Michael Brown, and Philando Castile.
Those situations that happened so many years ago occurred and there was no action. And so, you know, that's what I thought about when I was trying to decide whether, should I continue with introducing this training bill when there's so much more that needs to be done? Well, if we can get it done, if we can improve training, if that can make a small difference, then we should make that small difference. That's important to me.
Another reform introduced by a Senate Democrat announced a statewide effort that would collect Michigan use of force data. But departments are only encouraged to report. The bills banning chokeholds and on bystander intervention haven't had committee hearings.
Tristan Taylor, who led some of the protests in Detroit, says this is part of a pattern he's observed, one where lawmakers introduced resolutions or ideas that are real reforms, but it's not included in legislation.
If the politicians and the legislature were serious, they would find a way. They have to find a way. Like, that should be their starting point, not like passing legislation that emphasizes laws that already exist, or rather rules that already exist and that aren't followed.
Aisha Bell Hardaway is an assistant professor of law at Case Western Reserve University. She studies police reforms and serves on the independent monitoring team evaluating police reform in Cleveland. She says if lawmakers don't add teeth to their proposals or address things like funding, it's hard to imagine these reforms could be effective.
While these minimum standards are the current best practices that are looking to reform policing, that doesn't necessarily mean that we understand the effectiveness in addressing them. You pull out implicit bias training as something that is questionable, and quite honestly, without knowing what the curriculum looks like and who's delivering that training, right? It's hard to understand if it really will be effective.
Legislators from Congress down to the local mayor's office are dealing with police reforms right now. But Professor Hardaway says unless they address the powerful interests that maintain the status quo, like police union contracts and qualified immunity, it will be hard to repair the damage.
Beverly Boatley is from Holt, Michigan. She was at the NAACP protest with a cardstock poster of a smiling young black man. Her 20-year-old grandson, Elijah Boatley, who was killed by police in Phoenix. She says the top reform she's pushing for is taking away qualified immunity, and it's frustrating to watch the legislature make small reforms.
And how is it that we haven't made more progress in the years, the decades that people have been pushing for this? Why did it take this time for this to come out like it has? You know what I mean? So now what are we going to do with it? Are they going to just continue to put these band-aids on it? Or are we going to actually see some structural change?
For people like Boatley, reform is urgent. Protesters are calling for drastic overhauls of the way policing works and addressing systemic racism. Currently, the reforms in the state legislature don't even come close. In Lansing, I'm Riley Began.
And I'm Abigail Sensky.
And that is your morning news roundup for this Monday, the 22nd day of June, 2020. I'm Mike Horace. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again tomorrow.